Hi, Steve Kinnane with you, filling in for Richard Feidler. Arthur Morris is one of Australia's greatest ever Test cricketers. A left-handed opening batsman, he made his Test debut after the Second World War and toured with Bradman's Invincibles in 1948. On that tour, he became the first Australian batsman in 20 years to outscore Bradman in a Test series, scoring three crucial centuries in Australia's 4-0 defeat of the English.
2 for 156, and now it's a coxswain again moving in. The stiff, straight approach up to Morris. And there's a better shot too. It's through the covers. This might be his 100. If Washbrook's chasing it, they've taken their second. Now it's going into the fence. Yes, it's 4, and it's a 100 to Morris. Well played, Arthur Morris. A good innings of 101.
Arthur Morris was the first player in the world to score 200s in his first class debut. He was named in Australia's team of the 20th century, and he's a true gentleman. At the age of 91, he is Australia's oldest living Test cricketer and one of only two players left from Bradman's great team of 1948. I caught up with Arthur Morris recently at his home on the New South Wales Central Coast. Let's start with Don Bradman's last Test innings at the Oval back in 1948. Australia had just bowled England out for 52. You and Sid Barnes had just put on over 100 for the first wicket. Then Sid gets out and Don Bradman comes out to the wicket for his last Test match innings. What do you remember of his entry to the wicket?
Well, I do remember him walking out, but I was a bit surprised he did come out. I think it was getting on towards a bit later in the afternoon, and we'd got a few runs, and I thought, well, maybe one of the others or bowlers had come out as a substitute, you know. And,
yeah, as a night watchman, yeah. In.
But out he came, and then the big moment happened.
Did you think this was probably going to be his last Test match innings, because it was the first innings?
Yeah. I think so. Well, of course, if we hadn't got enough runs, he might have batted a second time. In fact, somebody said that to me. If I hadn't got a number of runs, he could have batted the second time. It was my fault that he didn't have an average of 100. So I said, yeah, but he might have got another duck.
That's right. So it might have dropped even further.
Yeah.
So Don Bradman needed just 4 runs to get an average of 100 in Test cricket. Did people know that at the time in that innings?
Not that I did, and I don't think Don did. He may have, but he certainly didn't make it known at all.
So what do you remember of when he came out and the English reception?
Well, he came out and the captain of the English side and the fellas gathered around and they gave him 3 cheers or something, hip hip hooray and all that sort of jazz and... I think they sang for he's a jolly good fellow, and if I remember myself, I thought, I'm up the other end. What do I do? Do I join in or leave it to the English boys? So I shut up and left to the English boys.
So they've sung for he's a jolly good fellow,
yeah.
And Eric Hollies is bowling. What happens next?
Well, he bowled him a very good leg spinner, and he leaned forward and hit it, as I remember, just slightly to mid-off. And then Hollies bowled him a beautiful wrongen. Hollies is a finger spinner, and it's easier to bowl a wrongen with the finger spin than it is being a wrist spinner. But it was a very well-delivered ball right on the right spot, and Don got bowled, and as he usually did, if he got 100 or he got a duck, he just better to put the bat under his arm, and off he went.
And what was the reaction from the crowd and from the English players?
Well, dead silence, really. That's what I remember. I do think that if it happened today that the world's greatest batsman was going out for a duck and the last time you'd see him, the bowler would start running and they'd all chase him around the field. Wouldn't have got too far because Eric wasn't all that athletic. I'd pounce on him and kiss him and cuddle him, and as they do, you know. And I think I heard the captain say, jolly well bowled, and you know, that was it.
And what were your thoughts at the time? What was your reaction as he walked back to the pavilion?
Oh, John, what are you doing to me here? I've got to put my head down here. So that was my reaction, yeah.
Because you'd met Don Bradman as an 8-year-old in Dungog. To see his last Test innings end in that fashion must have been quite a moment for you.
I don't know that I reacted very much differently because I had been up the other end a couple of times when you got a duck, you know. It was just you're thinking about the game itself and you're not really thinking, isn't this a shame or whatever. That never occurred to me, I'm sure. I just say, oh, that's bad luck, Don. Now, what's the state of the game and who's coming in and so on, you know.
And you ended up getting on with it. You scored 196 in that innings. Mm. Now, not many people remember your 196. Everyone remembers the duck, but less people remember your innings.
That's true. It's very true, and it's written that way too.
Do people come up to you and ask you about that and not aware that you made those runs that day?
Well, it has occurred, and it did occur in business years, you know, when a fellow came up. He didn't know all that much about cricket, but he did know about Bradman's duck, and it was in the way of the conversation that just sort of his thinking of something reminded him of that, and then Bradman got up. I said, yes, I was there. He said, were you? He said, what were you doing over there? You're on business? I said, no, I was up the other end. And he said, did you get any runs? I said, 196, and then I sort of stopped for a little moment to get the message across. Run out, I said. Nobody got me out. I ran myself out.
So that team you were a part of became known as the Invincibles, the only Australian cricket team to tour England without losing a match. What made that team so special?
I think it was a very good side. Though the English side was a good one, you know, like Hutton and Compton and Bedser and Wright, and Bedser was a fine player. But we were very strong, and it was just after the war and had the players to click, you know, older players and younger players, and Neil Harvey came in as the only one who hadn't been in the services, you know, so he was really the new boy. The others, we'd played against the Englishmen in 46, 47, they came out to Australia, and then we also played against the Indians in, I think it was 48 or 49 before we went to England.
So you were touring a country that had been ravaged by war, and they were still under strict rationing. What was England like at the time?
It was pretty dire, you know, the food and everything else, and we had the same food as they did anyway. A lot of damage done by bombing was still was around, but still they were getting at it. But things were pretty tight in regard to the food and general living for the locals.
And did the fans love seeing the Australian cricket team back there?
It was very important, actually, that we did play, because this is before colour television. And unfortunately, a lot of people today, I think the young players, think that game only started when coloured television came in. It was very important to the counties that we played 3 days through, you know, series. We were there for 6 months, virtually. So we're playing each county, and one or two of them we played twice. But that was a source of money. Yep. It was so important. And I felt very sorry for Don, because every county wanted him to play, because that meant more people, because of his great name and his great batsmanship. It wasn't easy, and hotels were pretty average, but we battled on, and it was a great tour.
How important was it to Don Bradman to go through that tour unbeaten?
I don't think it ever occurred to him. I certainly never mentioned anything to me, and we were nearly beaten a couple of times. I don't think that he thought about it. As long as we won the test matches, I think that's what he was thinking about.
On that issue of the test matches, Bradman's biographer Irving Rosenwater pointed out that Australia didn't lose one of its first 20 tests after the war. And he put that statistic down to what he called an efficiency approaching ruthlessness, and that much of that ruthlessness stemmed from the influence of Don Bradman. Is that a fair assessment in your eyes?
No. Where do they get Don to go on to these fantasies? Really, I am amazed sometimes I read of these things, and I just can't believe it. No, I'm ruthless. We go to play to win, and of course, and the silly part about it, sometimes I wish he was been more ruthless and not played extra counties, because they wanted him. He didn't want to, you know, and of course, and then once or twice we played on the third day to get the crowd there to keep the game going, and I'd rather be back in London instead of being stuck out at Leeds or whatever it was. Why this ruthless business? Well, I wonder where that came from. I've never struck anything more ruthless than an English professional. So you got to laugh when it was...
So you don't buy that argument then, that Don Bradman was driven by body line and previous test matches to grind the English into the dust?
Oh, I think there was a bit of that in one or two games, perhaps, because he didn't give them an inch, really, because he still was the memory of his 1938 when they got about 1,100 something. Yeah. And he was broke down. And
he broke his ankle, didn't he, bowling
exactly,
against them?
And I think that was little or miss.
That tour was the first time in 20 years an Australian batsman outscored Bradman in a test series.
Yes.
And that batsman was you. You scored yes. 3 centuries, 700 runs. The tour was a bit of a personal triumph for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yes. I enjoyed batting over there. And I think the more you play, the better you get.
It was a triumph for you, but you started that tour slowly. Is that a lesson in itself that it's good to have a number of warm-up games on an important tour, and it's also important to stick with your players and let them strike a little bit of form?
I think you're right, yes. Well, that happened in those days. Today, now, they can fly everywhere. You're getting so many more test matches in small amounts of time. You haven't got that feeling that you're talking about, that you can should go through with the same people and know their strengths and weaknesses right throughout the whole time.
And so on that tour, you had time to adapt to the conditions.
Sure. Oh, yes, yes. Don and I got hundreds in the first match against Worcester. In fact, I got a century every time if I played in South Africa, England and West Indies. I got 100 in my first time there, you know, so it was extraordinary.
And that's why Ray Robinson, the great Australian cricket journalist, wrote a chapter in his book about you saying hello with hundreds, I think he called it.
Oh, yes, hey, good day. Here I am. Yeah. Now you forget about me now. So.
So let's talk about that amazing run chase at Headingley when Australia chased a world record 404 runs on the final day on a turning pitch as well.
Yeah.
You and Don Bradman put on a partnership of 301. Did you give yourself any chance of chasing that total down when you walked out to bat?
I know that Don wrote in his diary that he feared that we would be beaten. And I know I didn't have a diary, but I was bloody sure we'd be beaten. So we went out and Lindsay opened with us because Sid Barnes had been hurt in the match before. He got out early and then we battled away in the first series. We were both lucky. I was a bit lucky on the stumping. But the ball, I turned around and it jumped so much it hit Evans on the chest and it bounced back, you know. So that was showing you what the wicket was like. And it turned a lot, but it turned slowly, which is a good chance. And, of course, we were able to penetrate the field because Yardley, the captain, everybody thinking that they would win this match, had to keep the field up. So once you passed the cord and the fieldsman in close, it was 4 pennies, you know. We were not aware at that stage that we had any chance of winning in the morning session. It was only after lunch that we really got at them.
And I think there was a key moment after lunch where you decided to go after Dennis Compton. Is that right? Dennis Compton was known as a great batsman, but he could also bowl a bit of spin.
He's a very good off-spinner, left-hand wrist spinner.
And is it true that Don Bradman was having troubles with Compton, so you decided to hit him out of the attack?
Yeah, that was virtually it, yes, because Don didn't pick his wrong one a couple of times. And then he did come to me too and he said at one stage just after lunch that his back wasn't going too well. And then Compton came on and then I decided, because he wasn't a regular bowler, though he's a good bowler, and playing defensively at him made him a better bowler, I decided to go after him. So I did go after him and he had 4 overs and didn't matter where he pitched them, either hit him high over or pulled or whatever, you know. He wasn't able to bowl a good length at me because I was covering him, you know, back and forward. And I was just very disappointed that Fingleton, writing, said Bradman was very unlucky to have 4 very poor overs bowled by Compton. I made sure they were.
Because you made them bad, didn't you?
I made them bad. So after all that effort, and you think, oh, gee, I did a great job there, and you read next time and say, God, I was unlucky. Well, Bradman was unlucky. Was he, Mel? Anyway, that put us on the road to the fact that we're going to draw, at least. But from then on, we just kept the pressure on, and then we saw that we were going to win it.
So you went after Compton, and you used to hit over the top a bit, but Bradman didn't like that, did he?
Bradman always hits along the ground, yeah.
So did he ever tell you to stop hitting the ball in the air?
Never. Oh, no. In fact, he said to me one day, and this is what I'm, you know, when I get onto coaches, I get a bit cranky about coaches, but And he said to me one day, he said, I don't know how you do it, he said, but keep doing it. So, which means that I played so differently from the way he played. And that's in our day that you had different physique of players and different blokes played differently. So there were no coaches to tell them to perhaps end up looking like a lot of sausages coming out of the machine, all doing the same thing.
And so Bradman probably acknowledged too that when he was a young cricketer and he turned up at New South Wales training for the first time, somebody told him to change his grip. Yeah. And he probably...
Oh, that'd be a certainty, wouldn't it? I can imagine the back saying, oh, no, son, you can't, you'll never get runs with a grip like that. It was a ridiculous grip that he had, so we might never have ever heard of him. I don't know. You know, I believe in coaches perhaps teaching the fundamentals to youngsters, but cricket hasn't got a place for coaches. I mean, you've got to have them in football, got a physician, playing, everything. You know, cricket... There's no coach when the bloke's bowling 100 miles an hour at you and he drops the ball short and the coach says, don't hook that, there's a bloke out in the field. Your little computer in the head tells you what to do. If you see kids that have got a lot of ability, don't coach them. Let them develop their own cricket because they will learn to bat as at watching better players play in district cricket or whatever. And playing older players. And then this is how it was in our days because there were no coaching. Bradman, McCabe, anybody. Trump, nobody had coaches. There were no coaches. These are great players. And the same thing until the big money came in. And then you start getting coaches for everything, you know.
Didn't you play a role in a sense? Senior players like yourself later in your career, like Ray Lindwall and... With the younger players like Richie Benno coming through, didn't you play a kind of coaching role with them about mentoring them?
A little bit. But if they asked a question, that's all. I'm really it. You ask the question of a player you're playing with. In fact, I could have done with it once or twice when you get into a bad habit. It's really into bad habits. But you can ask another player, what am I doing wrong here? But you don't have to have a coach to sort of say, you must put your foot there and you must do that. I often think that Ian Chappell was right when he said that he used coaches to go to the ground.
And I think Bill O'Reilly said coaches cause more damage than a sudden hailstorm.
Did he? Well, you know, that's interesting. And anyway, I would never get involved in coaching, nor would I interfere or go to a player and say, this is what I think you should do, because that's the coach's business. He's there and I keep out of it, you know, it's just not my role. But I wish sometimes I could say, please use your back leg a bit more and use your feet a bit more instead of, you know, getting defensive, use your back foot to get into defence and don't put your front foot down, because once you put your weight on the front foot, you're stuck there. And feet are the most important things in batsmanship, and it goes for anything, whether it's football, boxing or anything. Your feet are in the right spot, you're a good player.
And you think too many modern players lunge forward onto the front foot too early?
Well, I think so. I've been seeing it particularly in opening batsmanship. I'm a spattership, isn't it? If I heard that word batter, I turn the sound off. So then batsmanship. I'm forgiven for using that word, I hope.